The first cell phone was demonstrated in 1973 by Martin Cooper. You know what wasn't demonstrated? Shared plans. Over 50 years later, you can save on one line thanks to Visible. When you switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless Visible, you can get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon for just $25 a month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees. No, really. You can look around for them. They're not there. Switch now at Visible.com. Save on wireless without the hassle. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Contained herein are the heresies of Radolf Buntwine, erstwhile monk-turned-traveling medical investigator. Join me as I uncover the blasphemous truth of a plague-ridden world, that ours is not a loving God, and we are not its favored children. The Heresies of Radolf Buntwine, coming January 2nd, wherever podcasts are available.
Beyond and hello, everyone. My name is Jonathan Dornbush, and this is Podcast Beyond, IGN's weekly PlayStation show covering all the latest and greatest in the world of PlayStation. And boy, do we have a lot of PlayStation stuff to talk about this week. We're getting into the realm of the summer event season, but we don't have that to talk about. But we do have a lot of Sony news that came out of a recent sort of investors call and report that they put out, sort of looking into the next year of what PlayStation's going to be doing, both on the game side and on the television side, if you're looking for some more PlayStation adaptations in the future. We've also got a potential leak of a sequel to a major PlayStation exclusive that we'll talk about, some game impressions, and a whole lot more. But before we get there, I'm joined this week by Jada Griffin.
Hello, hello, everybody. I am so happy that Marky Mark Splash Mountain Medina is here with us today. It's so great to have him back.
Jada's intro is just my intro. It's great.
Exactly. Fresh.
You can see all my hair still wet. I just got off the ride. I'm glad to be back. No, that's a real thing, except for I never even rode Splash Mountain. I have no idea where that came from. All of a sudden, I have like 9 DMs and a bunch of mentions, and it's people sending me pictures of Splash Mountain, and they're like, "Are you okay?" And I'm like, "What? What is happening?" Then Brian Altano, like a few days ago, goes, "Hey, by the way, that was us." And I'm like, "You."
I was saving the reveal. I was saving the reveal for the show.
I know. Brian, why'd you have to go? No, it's totally understandable. But, you know, Mark, you don't have to lie. We know you were stuck there for 3 days straight.
Yeah.
You had food, but you also only had the ride water. So you had to drink that, unfortunately, to sustain yourself.
While I was stuck up on the ride for a week and a half, you start to think, right? Splash Mountain, just an analogy for life, right? You ride the waves. Sometimes you go up and you go up a little bit more and you go straight for a long time. And then eventually you come crashing back down. It took me a week and a half to make that crash.
To get that metaphor? Yeah.
We all get there eventually.
We do. And we all eventually realize that ride is really out of date in some very gross ways. And I'm glad they're changing it.
They are changing it. Yeah. Hold on. Before we do any more of the show, I have a listener question. We're starting with a listener question tonight.
All right.
So basically, this is from @SashaNako on Twitter, friend of the show.
Yeah. Yes.
She wants to know why you never address the fact that there was a Taco Bell commercial for the Mexican pizza where Sora from Kingdom Hearts was mentioned, and you just didn't address it at all. Allow me to read you the lyrics. "Hold up, me and my posse pulled up. I placed a pickup order. Yeah, don't forget the soda. We're eating out our order. Key to my heart like Sora." Thoughts, Dornbush?
My first thought is, Jada, do you want to take this show to another call and we can just leave Mark behind?
Or, I think we should just transition back to the studio.
Yeah.
And to prevent Mark from being on the show.
This is what happens when you let me on.
To answer that question, I didn't know that existed until this moment. I'll be honest. That completely slipped my feed, my notifications. I do have a lot of Google alerts for Kingdom Hearts related terms, just in case, you know, they announce Kingdom Hearts 5 before Kingdom Hearts 4 comes out. But no, I had no idea that existed, and I don't know if I'm better off for knowing it, because the only way I know it is through you now.
You're a big fan of Kingdom Hearts.
That's true.
I'm a big fan of the Taco Bell Mexican pizza. This is now the main topic for the show.
Jade is a big fan of moving on from this conversation, I would assume.
You know what? I could go either way. I mean, I'm more of a cheesy gordita crunch kind of girl, you know. Yeah, it's each their own.
Wait until they take it from you, Jada. Wait.
They'll never take away the cheesy gordita crunch. It's the best item on the menu. That's why
they'll take it away.
No, they took away the Mexican pizza because there was good reasonings behind it.
No, it's so good.
But no, genuinely, to Sasha Naka, who I know, you know, tweets at us a bunch, is a big, wonderful follower of the show and a bunch of other content. Thank you for alerting me to that. I'll go experience it the way it was intended by our taco gods, and can get back to you once I've experienced that version of it, rather than
I sang it to perfection.
Sure, sure it was one for one, but yeah. Well, in addition to revelations about Taco Bell commercials, we do have a lot of big PlayStation stuff to talk about this week. Also, thank you to everyone out there for tuning in this week. As you may have noticed, if you're listening this week, we had to delay this episode. I've had a very busy, crazy week, so thank you for still tuning in on a different day. And of course, I just also wanted to say thank you to everyone who tuned in for episode 750. Obviously, we're into the next 50 before we march on to that scary 800 number that exists out there. But yeah, thank you to everyone who tuned in. We were able to do a full show in studio. We're obviously all remote this week. I'll be back in studio next week, and we'll continue to do sort of hybrid shows, you know, all in studio when people are available and people can go in. But yeah, we appreciate everyone who tuned in and enjoyed the show in that way. But yeah, we've got a ton to talk about this week. So I guess let's get into the first story, which kind of broke overnight. So PlayStation, for those who don't know, released, as we talked about a few weeks ago, all their investor relation information. I guess a couple weeks ago, I think it was May 10th or so when all that stuff came out. Now they've done sort of look-aheads for the year. They've done presentations across all of the Sony divisions of games, music, entertainment, kind of what to expect from the year and the coming fiscal years, basically to tell their shareholders why they're going to make a lot of money. As part of this, one of the big things that they sort of just dropped out of nowhere, this actually wasn't in the original presentation, but said later on by the, I believe, Sony Entertainment head, just during one of the calls. This was not, you know, on one of the slides, but they confirmed that there will be three more PlayStation adaptations in the works from PlayStation Productions. The first that they mentioned was a Horizon show coming to Netflix. The second is a God of War show coming to Amazon, which we had previously reported on from Deadline had reported that, but I don't think PlayStation ever officially announced it. And then the third is a Gran Turismo show in development. So we know those three shows are coming. Of course, this is in addition to all the other stuff that's been announced. The Uncharted movie, which has already been released, the Ghost of Tsushima movie, the Twisted Metal TV show. Am I forgetting anything else in there? The Tealoo show, of course, as well, which I just take as a foregone conclusion these days. But so we have those three shows on the horizon. We don't have casting details. We don't have information on creatives who are attached to the shows. You know, with the Last of Us, we do know that Neil Druckmann has been involved directly. We don't know what the involvement will be from, say, Guerrilla or Santa Monica for the TV shows going forward, or from Polyphony for the Gran Turismo show, which I want to start there because I really just hope it's a live-action Cars show is what I'm hoping for.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, no. Gran Turismo needs to go to Crunchyroll. It needs to be an anime, and it needs to be Initial D. I want Initial D Gran Turismo every day of the week. Like, if you haven't watched Initial D, it is one of the best racing and race car animes. Like, you need to watch it. I would love to see Gran Turismo do that. That is by far my vote for where Gran Turismo should go. Obviously, I'm not on their board to make the decision. But you know what? I've been sending them letters to the post office every day. So one of them eventually I'm going to learn the address.
The news broke yesterday.
Jada was already on it.
She's like, I did it today. I've done it every day.
Who do you think inspired them for this idea? Like, this was okay. This. Sure. There you go. This is where it needs to go.
You're going to get a consulting producer credit on the final version of it.
Chances are it'll be a special thanks, but you know, sure. I'm hoping for more.
I'm a big fan. Hopefully I can get some love in the comments for this one, because I don't know how many people are a big fan of this movie, but I'm a big fan of the Aaron Paul Need for Speed movie. So I am like kind of fine with like dumb car movies, because yeah, I'm a big Fast and Furious fan.
Really?
I like this that movie.
This is strike two to move to the studio mid-episode.
I thought it was a pretty good movie.
I think you're the only fan I've ever met of that movie.
Rami Malek. He's in it. He's naked in it.
I appreciate the actors that were in that movie, but
it's got who's the main star of Preacher? I don't remember his name.
And then you know
who I'm talking about.
But, yeah, like, yeah, the guy who is
Yeah, I forget his name. And then it's got Michael Keaton. Like it's a pretty good cast for a pretty weird movie, but like I don't know. I'm one of those, like, Tokyo Drift is my favorite Fast and the Furious movie, so I'm just, like, a sucker for really, like, really over-the-top dumb car movies, and so, I don't know. I thought it was pretty good. So, when I saw GT, that actually kind of excited me more than all the other ones.
Dominic Cooper.
That's it. That's the
also,
one.
Also, Imogen Poots and Dakota Johnson are at the movie, and Michael Keaton.
Michael Keaton, that's what I said. Yeah, he's awesome.
Man.
All right, yeah. Maybe we need to do it.
Have either of you seen Need for Speed?
No. It was reviewed awfully.
You should watch it.
Just to see if you like it.
It's one of those movies where you can kind of look at and is like, yeah, I don't need to spend my time watching this movie. It just kind of had that vibe. There's just a lot of movies that come out like that.
I'm just going to say, I'm not saying it's a good movie.
Sure.
Saying that I liked it.
All right. That's fair.
Okay.
I'll take that.
That's fair. Yeah. So, Jonathan, maybe we need to do a Beyond watch party for Need for Speed.
Oh, my God. Really on the PlayStation branding there, yeah.
Yes.
Oh my God. At least the both of us apparently need to watch this movie.
Hopefully I can get some love in the comments. Probably not, though.
I would like to see it. If there are other fans out there, I genuinely like to see it, because I've never heard anyone
like this movie.
Yes.
For me, the most obvious thing here, I think everyone, you know, obviously assumes, because we're getting Horizon and God of War in the same breath here, that we're looking at narrative-based shows, but especially with the way Gran Turismo 7 leads into the history of cars, the love of car culture, I see it as sort of a, like, probably maybe a reality show. Not, like, competition, but, like, a Top Gear or something like that.
I
didn't think of that.
Top Gear is one of the biggest shows in the world. Like, worldwide, it's so big. And so for Sony to kind of want to do something similar with the knowledge base and with the expertise that's at Polyphony, I feel like is probably the most natural fit, more so than a narrative-based Gran Turismo movie or TV show.
Like the games, like if you call racing games like niche, I guess some people would, like they go after a very specific audience. So why wouldn't the show go after a very specific audience? I think that makes complete sense.
Yeah, exactly. I agree.
So, you know, I think for everyone hoping, like, what are they going to do that's so weird about Gran Turismo? We'll have to wait and see, but that feels like a reasonable way to go to me. But moving on from there, I think the other two are the meatier ones for us to discuss potential there. And I do want to start with, because we've talked a little bit about God of War already on the show, I do want to start with Horizon. So right now it is just a Horizon show is in the works at Netflix. That's all we know. Based on the way, not even with all the, you know, the subscriber fall off and the behind the scenes issues that Netflix is going for, I have a little trepidation with Netflix as the home for this show. I don't know about the two of you, Jada. I want to start with you on just your general thoughts of like a Horizon show happening in the first place and then it being at Netflix. How are you feeling generally about that as a concept?
You know what? Regardless of feelings about Netflix, I think it could have a good home there. I would really like them to gorilla to work with the studio like Fortiche that did Arcane. If we got it something in that vein where it's very cinematic, very story driven, amazing like visual effects, I think it'd be another big hit this year for like an animated kind of style like that. That's my personal hope for it. If it's going to follow suit for anything that's been released on Netflix. I think that is the correct direction, in my opinion. And I would love to see that. And I would tune in and probably binge it in a week or like the first day.
So you would prefer an animated sort of take on
Yeah.
That.
Yeah. I want to see it. Like, I want to see, because there's just so much like that's like fantasy-esque with Horizon that I feel like to do it the best amount of justice, like going that kind of animated route really opens up the doors to, you know, showcase these giant machines and the explosions and the effects in the best way possible. Like that you just can't do with like a live action or any other type of style that, you know, without ballooning the budget. Because remember, these are TV shows. These are smaller budget things. These aren't going to get, you know, the 200, 300 million or more for a movie budget, whatever movie budgets are. I don't do money.
I mean, unless there are Stranger Things, some shows will exactly. get those exceptions, but yeah, we have no idea kind of what they're willing to spend on Horizon show if it does go live action, to your point. And yeah, that is, I think that's the biggest worry, because you do see these giant intricate machines, these very lush landscapes, which obviously you could find places in the world and, you know, mm-hmm. maybe do some CG over them or natural set dressing. But you start to very quickly, if you want any sort of sustained, repeated use of these robots, it's probably going to be really costly to animate them episode yeah. to episode, I would assume. And probably very easy to make it look bad.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Mark.
Yeah, Netflix is kind of like my least favorite service of all the services now. Like, I don't know. There's just nothing really on it that I watch a lot. I've always thought about Horizon Show and, like, if it could work. And I've talked about this show before on this podcast. And so I'll bring it up again. Apple TV Plus has that show C with Jason Momoa. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. it's so – Horizon was a show where I was like, you know, would that charm be able to, like – make it over to like actual like television, right? And it's, I think it could, because C kind of follows that same kind of premise where it's post-apocalyptic. This is like hundreds of years after the apocalypse, so several generations removed. And in that show, just like in Horizon, there's a lot of like, they come up with names for things, like, you know, they call it like they call metal like the god bone and they stuff like that, because like they don't know what things are. Like in Horizon, it's like you find like the ancient wind chime or something like that, but when you look mm-hmm. at a picture of it, it's like a keychain, right? And so it's like, because they don't know what a key is, right? Because that's not things that, and so they stumble upon things that they're just like, well, we're gonna have to name this whatever. And so I kind of thought about like, could a show like that work? But after watching C, I think it could. But I very much agree with the fact that like Horizon is very like big on the robots, and there's a very good chance that that could end up not looking great. And so something like an Arcane style, like art style, could lend itself really, really good, because then they can make anything they want instead of having to set dress and make CGI buildings. Like, everything is art. So I say I'll agree with Jade on that one. As much as I don't super love like animated stuff, I do think that that is like makes the most sense for Horizon.
And I thought he was going to say that he, as much as he super doesn't enjoy agreeing with Jada, but I was like, where's the waiting for the shoe to drop?
I was going to say also to Jada, your point, you know, if they went an animator route, they'd also be able to retain the voice actors who do all these roles, yep. because that is mm-hmm. something where like, Ashley Birch doesn't exactly look like Aloy, whereas like in some right. of these works, people do look a little bit like the roles that they're playing. Whereas here it is very much a like, no, oh, there's a lot of difference often in the voice actors to the people in the game, save for like Sylens, who is just Lance Reddick. Yep. But yeah,
everybody in those games are themselves except for Aloy.
It's pretty yep. much. Yeah. But that's such an important character. And I do want to get to the mm-hmm. story question in a second. I think for me, if they go a live action route, you know, Netflix isn't afraid to spend the money. I will say there are parts where it did look cheaper. That was mostly due, I think, to COVID and everything. But Cowboy Bebop, you know, quality of the show aside, they spent a lot of money on, and some of their mm-hmm. sets were gorgeous. Like they did a lot of very beautiful set work there. And so I do believe they're willing to spend the money if they do think it's going to be big, even if it doesn't work out, but they're much choosier about that stuff now. But stuff like Umbrella Academy, Shadow and Bone, Stranger Things, obviously, they spend a lot of money on. I think for me, if you do a live action, obviously a lot of the robots are going to be CG. I really, really hope, though, they do build practical stuff if they do a live action show, because it's the easy comparison, but seeing the robots in Horizon is those Jurassic Park scenes writ large in a different way. And so I want that moment of seeing, you know, the Brontosaurus or the T-Rex or one of the creatures stepping forward and like actually being in a scene, even if it's just part of a robot that they can interact with. I think if you get the right puppeteers, the right craftsmen, you can make stuff that looks really, really cool to do that. And then mix in CG for the bigger stuff.
It's definitely not out of the realm of possibility when you think about how good the Transformers movies looked back in the day. Like, if you kind of watch them now, they're like a little, but like those movies looked great for the time. Like, those robots completely, because that's the thing that always like throws me off, is like, these robots need to move and you need to be able to like knock pieces off of them. And it's like, that's how they worked in Transformers, right? So it's like, I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility, but that's, like Jada said, that's big movie budget versus television budget.
You know? Yep. And, you know, another thing to consider is, a lot of fans are always very cautious when anytime something gets adapted to a TV show or a movie, it's like, why didn't you follow the storyline? Why didn't you get the voice actors? To Jonathan's point, mm-hmm. like going an animated route will help avoid some of that kind of fallout from the fans in the audience. I know there's going to be a lot of people who, like, I'm a big Horizon fan, so I'm going to tune in and check it out regardless, just because I'm in the industry and that's part of our job and we've got to know these things. But I'm genuinely interested to see what they do. But there are a lot of people who are like, nah, I'm not going to check it out. They're not using the same voice actors. There's some people who will just not watch it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think on that casting note, to your point, if this does become something that's live action, I have basically a two-part question to that point, Jaden, and maybe I'll start with you. One, is there anyone you would think of to cast as Aloy if they did go a live action route? And two, do you want a story that is focused on Aloy, or do you want a side story? Because I think a lot of people, you know, when they've talked about adapting Mass Effect or something, it's like, well, I don't know if I just want to watch that same story unfold on screen. I might want to see something else in the universe. But obviously that story is what drew people to the universe. So you have that give and take. So I guess like twofold, do you want to see it be Aloy's story, or do you want to see it be something else? And if you, regardless, do you have anyone in mind for Aloy?
I want to see, I'd rather the story focus on, if we're, you know, feeding off of Forbidden West, I'd like it to be based on Angela Bassett's character. I would really like to see her kind of origin, and that I feel like the whole culture war that they were doing there, and their tribe war and everything around that, like, she just wasn't in Forbidden West enough for her name being on the project. Like, I wanted more of her. So I'd love to see more of her story, her interactions with Lance Riddick as Silence. Like, I would love to see that kind of, I'd love to see more of his story. We've seen so much of Aloy's story, and I love Aloy. And I definitely would like to see elements of her, in the show, but I think I would be more interested to see the other characters get some more time to shine, show off some of the other tribes, you know, get to really get into the nitty gritty and world build on it. As for actors to play Aloy, if they did do live action, I don't have anybody good in mind. So I'm only going to say the one actress that I can think of right now, because somebody, we did a social post about her, like, denying rumors of her being Sue Storm, and that was Bryce Dallas Howard. And it's literally because she has red hair. Aloy has red hair. It is not a good guess. Please do not roast me in the comments. I cannot think of another actress for the life of me right now to play Aloy.
I can do the audience suggestion one. Sure. The one most people were screaming is Rose Leslie from Game of Thrones, who played Ygritte, who already played this like wildling redheaded, you know. So it's like, that's every time I see live action Horizon, it's like you just see pictures of her. That's who people want. Is she the best for Aloy? I don't know. Maybe.
Go ahead, Jada.
I was gonna say, Mark, I was figured you were gonna, because I just thought of another one. I figured you would have went with Heli R from Severance to play Aloy. That would have been your guess.
Oh, let's go.
Probably a little too old to play who is essentially a 16-year-old, but
probably. I do, but you know.
Yeah, I will say shout out to, because I definitely saw his before I even thought of it, but Joseph Moran, who's the host of The Trophy Room, another great PlayStation podcast, suggested Erin Kellerman as Aloy. She's been in Falcon and Winter Soldier, I believe, was part of that like resistance group.
Oh, yeah, yeah, okay.
Who could also be someone who's also, I think, a little bit in the age range that works out. But yeah, I mean, to your point, a lot of the other actors other than Aloy do look like themselves, and many of them have done movie and TV roles. And Jada, to your point, I think like the best thing a TV show could do is to expand the viewpoint of the world and to give you that stuff. Like I think ensemble TV shows that give you those different perspectives are so great. And I think we're sort of expecting that from The Last of Us. Like, we are going to get Joel and Ellie, but it sounds like the other side characters are going to get a little bit more of an elevated role. And so to have something like that here, especially with, and I know we've talked about it a lot, but like the way Forbidden West puts more of a role and focus on the supporting cast, I think would make the most sense for a TV show as well. But yeah, hopefully, you know, it sounds like this is something that's very early in production. We have no details, so we'll see who gets attached, what the creatives are, what cast, if it's live action or animated, if those things change. It's possible one of those things was mentioned and I just missed it in my news roundup. But of course, then the other piece is God of War, which I know we've talked about a little bit on the show, has been mentioned out there in the ether, I guess, just as a like temperature check of the room, especially as we get closer to Ragnarok. Mark, I'll start with you. How are you feeling about a possible adaptation?
I'm so Vikings'd out, dude. Like, that's like my biggest thing. Is I made a tweet a few weeks ago where I was like, and that's just based off just Ragnarok itself. Like, God of War Ragnarok, the game, is the last thing to allow to use the Ragnarok subtitle in at least 3 to 5 years. Like, we need a break. And like, don't get me wrong, I just watched The Northman. I thought it was great. That's a very different, like, take on Vikings. Well, maybe it's not that different, actually, because it's how supernatural it is. That's kind of like the point. But I would say, if you can believe it, of the three, this one is the least exciting to me, only because I'm just kind of Vikings out. But
So Gran Turismo.
honestly, well, here's the thing. Like, a Gran Turismo show is like we said, we have no idea what that's going to be. With Horizon, there's so many different ways it could go, where with God of War, it's so cinematic already, to the point that the 2018 game was built to, like, have no cuts, right? Like, it's a very cinematic game, so, like, there's not a whole lot of room for, like, guessing there. You assume it's going to be a very gritty, ultra-violent, very cinematic, gruff, Viking, Norse mythology TV show, right? Like, could be wrong. Maybe that'll be the animated one. Who knows?
Jada, what about you?
So I'm in two camps on this one. Yes, I could totally see the very gritty, kind of maybe going the route of like old HBO series like Rome and stuff like that, that were like really big ones, very gritty like that. I could definitely see them going that and just really, really leaning into the violence and the blood and everything like that to really make it that, you know, what we're used to with the older God of Wars. And like, this one is definitely had, like, 2018 had blood, but it was nowhere near as much as the previous games. But also, I would love to see it animated, because I think, you know, obviously this is when it's going to Amazon, so it's not the the same kind of thing, but Castlevania for Netflix was amazing, and they showed a lot of blood. There was a lot of gore. It was very visual, very cinematic, done with all the fight scenes and stuff like that. I would love to see God of War done that route. That's where I personally stand on it. And I think I'm probably most excited to see what God of War ends up being, most out of all three of them. That's where I'm more excited to see what they end up choosing for the style for this one.
It's tough because there's already a show called Vikings, right? And so yeah. it's like that's where I'm like, man, are we just getting another one of those? Or, you know, I assume, you know, the crux of God of War is Kratos, right? And so it's like, obviously there's going to be a little bit of difference, but yeah, there's just so much Viking stuff. Speaking of, I am playing through a lot of the Castlevania games right now. I've never watched the Castlevania show just because, like I said, I'm not super into, like, you know, animation stuff like that. So is it really good? Everybody says
yes.
It's really good.
Castlevania is probably one of the best animated shows we've got in the last decade. Like, right there, right up there with Arcane. They're Those are like top two, like must watch for animated shows.
I love the games. I'm playing through Aria of Sorrow right now, but I had already previously beaten. I beat one. Three is incredibly hard, and then I beat four, and now I'm playing Aria of Sorrow only because I was like, after playing those linear ones, I'm like, I want to do the castle thing, but I've played through Symphony of the Night so many times. Aria of Sorrow is great, and it's on PS5.
Mm-hmm. Well, Aria and Dawn of Sorrow, which I don't think has been ported because it was the DS one. That like that two-hander is a really, really great era for that GBA DS era, which was great in general. But yeah, I like, to both of your points, I think it is the one that has both the most risk to kind of fall because it is based on the most cinematic of the three. But I hope at the very least, if they're doing it, they have a reason for it, you know, similarly to The Last of Us. And especially with Neil's involvement there, like, I think they're doing the TV show and understand that doing it for TV is different from doing it from a game. They're very much making it an adaptation in a way that uses the different medium in a better way. From what we've heard of the story and the casting and all these things, I think hopefully similarly with God of War and not just Corey's obviously attention and love for the story, but that whole narrative team and the whole team in general at Santa Monica for the care that they put into crafting 2018, which I think is currently the expectation for what's going to be adapted. Hopefully there's a reason for it in building it out this way beyond just, you know, brand recognition. Obviously that's part of it. It's selling on a big name. Everyone knows. Even people who don't play God of War have probably heard of God of War and might tune in to see it because they didn't get to play the game, something like that. But yeah, this one is, I would say in the same way that like I was worried about Netflix and what they might be willing to spend, I'm less worried about Amazon because I do think they will spend the everything to make a show. Like the Lord of the Rings show looks very expensive. You know, that one's coming out later this year. That looks like it cost a lot of money.
What's the other one? Wheel of Time?
Wheel of Time is also
people,
going.
People say that that's like a really, really high produced show.
Yeah. I mean, even stuff like it's a much more grounded show, but like they spend quite a bit, I think, on Mrs. Maisel because of all the period stuff. Like that is not a cheap show to produce because of all that attention to detail. So I don't think Amazon would be opposed to spending the money. I do think this is maybe a show, both this and Horizon, that could probably benefit from using that volume technology that the Lucasfilm shows use, where it's like, They're in a set that kind of has that stuff projected already rather than green screen. And they're able to figure that stuff out in camera to make it look authentic. Because Kratos is going to go a lot of places. He's going to go to different realms. That's going to be a lot of sets to build, a lot of different places to produce. I hope they can capture that. But yeah, it is one of those things where it's like, man, that's going to be tough to live up to.
You know what I wouldn't be surprised is if we get this series, because they didn't say when this... They didn't give us like really any details about what these are going to be. Could be potentially the interlude between Kratos leaving Greece and coming to the Vikings, the Norse stories. It could be kind of like a in between story that would give you know a lot of room to show Kratos's growth as a person. You know him. You know his first steps at becoming a dad and probably failing when Atreus was a baby. Seeing Faye, right, is his wife's name, if I remember correctly. And, you know, giving us a chance to see her actually in action and kind of, like, get us more emotionally invested in his story of being in the Norse realms and such. So that's my personal prediction for where it's going to go. And I think it's a story I would love to see.
I like that. Yeah, that is also, again, speaking to that like idea of adapting the game or doing something that complements it. I think that could be really fertile ground, sort of in the way that like The Mandalorian is in between movies, but there's a lot of, you know, area to explore there. That would be a really cool way to approach it. I think they can also, they then aren't as beholden to having to replicate, oh, the really cool dragon fight or, you know, really cool X moments with the stranger or things like that. It could be really great. But yeah, it's also a big, ambitious, scoped show. But yeah, hopefully, obviously, we're very early on with these shows. I think just in general, before we move on, just quickly, how do you all feel about, and Jade, I'll start with you, just PlayStation generally getting into this? You know, I think right now we're seeing Halo sort of have a middling reception on the Xbox side. Nintendo is obviously taking a very... a measured approach to adaptations, the Mario movie getting delayed, clearly them wanting to like make sure that is perfect. PlayStation is going all in, obviously.
This episode of Podcast Beyond is brought to you by NordVPN, a great way to protect yourself online while also improving your overall experience while enjoying cyberspace. Are you tired of streaming shows, movies, or sporting events being unavailable in your region due to draconian restrictions that are based on completely arbitrary geographical boundaries in physical meat space? Well, switch your virtual location to a place where that's no longer an issue. The same goes for shopping. You can get the best possible deal on subscriptions, flights, hotels, and other goods and services like that from websites that like to play favorites with certain territories and currencies. Meanwhile, encrypted traffic protects your data from hackers, viruses, malware, phishing sites, and other harmful hitchhikers of the information superhighway. Though really, it's more of an information autobahn because there is no speed limit with NordVPN. It is the fastest VPN in the world, so there won't be any buffering or lagging, and it'll stop your ISP from throttling your bandwidth. Isn't that nice? One NordVPN account can be used across 6 devices, which is great. My wife has been using our account to watch all sorts of awful British reality TV shows that aren't available here, like Argument Island or Half Naked Idiots Fall in Love, and everyone's favorite, The Worst People Just Got Married, Let's Hear Them Talk About It. Shows that are so bad they're blocked in our part of the world for our own good, but luckily, NordVPN allows her to trick the internet into thinking she's in the UK so she and her awful friends can shriek and howl and cackle at the TV while I'm trying to relax. I've been using my VPN too. You know what I've been using it for? None of your business. Yep, that's right. And thanks to NordVPN, my data is safely encrypted, all bundled up in a weighted security blanket of incomprehensibly complex math problems, and nobody can tell what it's doing under there. Data, you do your thing. I'll leave you alone. 1 month of NordVPN coverage costs less than a cup of coffee. Coffee can't protect you from cyber criminals unless you throw it at them or pour it on their computers, and you'll probably get in trouble for doing that. So get NordVPN instead. To get the best possible discount off your NordVPN plan, go to nordvpn.com/pobeyond. That link will also give you 4 extra months on the 2-year plan. There's no risk with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee. Again, that is nordvpn.com/pobeyond. And now, back to the show.
Hey there, this is Justin Bartha. I made a funny new podcast, King of the Egg Cream. It has the greatest cast in the history of podcasts with actors like Louis Black.
I'm torn by my feelings for 2 women.
Bobby Cannavale.
You can eat it. Or if someone hits you, you can put it on your cut.
Melanie Lynskey.
I wonder what these marvelous things are that look just like boiled chicken feet.
Jason Ritter.
I can break things and pick locks and kill people.
Michael Stuhlbarg.
The whole point is to inspire people that they should make themselves better.
Ari Grainer.
No, don't whet its appetite. What are you, an idiot?
Me, Justin Bartha.
That's not just any egg cream, that's a Lemke's special.
And all narrated by the hilarious Richard Kind.
This is the story of Harry Dalowitz and how he rose from nothing to become New York's King of the Egg Cream.
So if you like funny true stories, come listen to King of the Egg Cream, available wherever you get your podcasts.
Obviously, Sony has like that picture side and that know-how there, but how do you feel about them essentially complementing the games business with this approach?
I mean, it makes sense. They're looking for new ways to expand their portfolio. They're, you know, they've got the whole live service games that they're trying to do with, you know, the Bungie acquisition and all these other games, which we'll get into, you know, that kind of stuff later. But it feels like just kind of the natural next evolution for Sony. Like they've always, you know, Sony has always had this arm that does movies. Why not have PlayStation kind of start to dip their toes into that and, you know, start making TV shows? Like I think it's the right call for them. I think it's a really good decision.
And Mark, what about you?
Yeah, it's so hard to say, right? Like Last of Us seems to be shaping out fine. Like from the very little bit that we've seen, like it looks cool, right? Mm-hmm. But like, who knows? It's so hard to say. I haven't heard like a ton of great things about the Halo show. And when I see it, it doesn't seem appealing to me. Right. And so am I going to see like a live action Kratos and like and that appeal to me? I don't know. It's really hard to say because I'm a big Halo fan and nothing about that show has done anything for me. And it has nothing to do with him taking his helmet off, and it doesn't have anything to do with the way Cortana looks. Like the show itself just kind of like looks like a fan-made kind of deal, and it just doesn't seem that interesting to me. And that's a very, very like tight rope they have to walk. Yeah. Of this being like this like really, really good show or just like fan servicey, almost to the point where it just looks like a big budget like YouTube video, right? With like cosplayers. So
yeah. And of course Sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to say, so it's really hard for me to get excited to hear, like, there's a Horizon show. All right, cool. We'll see.
For like, sure. Especially within, in you know, the scale from The Last of Us. You're looking at a thing where the biggest production stuff will be the different types of enemies that they'll encounter and the makeup work there and things like that, probably. Whereas here it's designing giant robotic creatures or creating different Norse realms and giant fantastical beasts. Yeah, there's a big jump. And I do think The Last of Us, you know, obviously the Uncharted movie got sort of a like middling reception as well. I think some people enjoyed it for what it was. Some people were like, this is not great. I still have yet to see it. But I think that one is also not indicative of what's going to happen. Because that was a movie that's been in production for 10 years. That was not a, like, PlayStation is doing its PlayStation production thing. This was kind of a holdover from another era. And a movie that was in development hell long enough for Mark Wahlberg to go from Drake to Sully. So, you know, little bit of a different case there. But yeah, we will, of course, keep track of all of these, of the Ghost movie, of Twisted Metal. We'll report in as we see more. And maybe we'll start to do movie and TV recaps on the show as they become more of a thing coming into the next few years. We'll see.
We'll do actual relevant ones.
That's true. Yeah. Yeah. We'll do ones related to... I mean, hey, you still can get that great Apple TV Plus deal on PlayStation. Anyway, moving on from there, in addition to that, there was some other just brief stuff to mention from PlayStation's portfolio. Look ahead, which is... It's a bit more... circumspect and expectation setting, but I do think it is important to talk about now because it's probably going to affect the next couple years. The first thing, it's not listed how I put it here in the run of show, but I'm just going to mention it very quickly because there's only so much we can say. The PSVR 2 is confirmed to launch with more than 20 games. We don't know what those 20 games are. The investors' reports mention seem to indicate that Horizon Call of the Mountain is going to be one of those launch games, which is great. To have a big game like that there. But other than that detail, we did not get any sort of launch window, what the lineup of other games is. We're still waiting. I think I got dozens of replies to my tweet about PSVR of saying, but is it backward compatible? And we still don't know. We still don't have that information, which I don't think is the greatest sign, but I hope is something that we learn about. I would prefer not to either have to rebuy Beat Saber or Tetris Effect or Astrobot or all those things, but also want people who didn't have PSVR to play those games. So we'll see what happens there, but that's a solid lineup of, you know, by numbers at least, that is a good amount of things to be able to jump into day one. But what those things are, we'll report on them when we see them. I think the other things that we can maybe speculate a little bit more on, but or talk a bit about are one, that Sony is aiming to have investment in its studios by IP, by franchises, be 50% split new and returning franchises by fiscal year 2025. I think in the coming fiscal year, they estimated it's going to be 1/3 new IP and 2/3 old IP. And then moving on from there, a 50-50 split is the goal. Jade, I'll start with you. How do you feel about that as just a general balance? I think obviously PlayStation fans like love the ongoing series like Horizon, God of War, Spider-Man, all that stuff, but there's always generally a hunger for new stuff as well, I think.
Yeah, no, I think it's the right call to move in this direction, because it's going, the studios that are already making these classic franchises that we all love, these, you know, very flagship titles that Sony's known for, they're going to get better at making them and making them faster. Obviously, that changes when new console generations kind of roll around and technology changes. Or if they try to shift it in a different direction. But I think that it is the right time to start investing in new mascots to help bring in new people to the brand, to bring in, to revitalize what Sony is known for, which is creating these like very cinematic characters and storylines that just kind of blow away the competition. So it's great. I think this is the right move for them. I don't know exactly what that's going to look like when it comes to like new IPs, because we've gotten a few new ones over the last 5 to 8 years in Horizon and like Days Gone. But it'd be interesting to see what more investment is going to look like for Sony when it comes to new character icons for their brand.
Yeah, absolutely agree. It should be interesting to see. For me, it's always one of those things where it's like, we only got here with new franchises that we love because they took risks to make new things. So yeah, if they don't keep that cycle going,
Yeah.
There's only so many sequels I think people will want to play of things.
Yeah, it's like, you know, for Horizon to exist, Killzone had to kind of go on the back burner, right? And, you know, same with, like, The Last of Us, right? They of course, made Uncharted 4 and Lost Legacy after The Last of Us 1, but it's not out of the realm for, like you have Ratchet & Clank, Insomniac's making Ratchet & Clank, and then they are now making Spider-Man games, you know? And then Wolverine, right? So there's some studios that have kind of clung to the past. Like, it's kind of weird, even with, like, God of War, right? God of War isn't a new IP, obviously, but at the same time, God of War 2018 is radically different than what God of War was. So it's still a reinvention of that series. I'm a big fan of new IPs, right? Like, we are all assuming we're going to get a third Horizon game. Why wouldn't we? But, like, do we need more Horizon after that? I love Horizon as much as the next person, but, like, I would be very excited to see what else they have up their sleeves, right? Like, I've said it before, like, I don't have this, like, clinging to the past that, like, that some people have, right? So it's like Sony Ben made Days Gone, right? And then now they're not going to make Days Gone 2, so what are they going to make? And everyone's like, Siphon Filter, they make this. And I'm like, I would rather than make something that I can't guess, right? I don't have this, like, need to revitalize every single series that has existed, right? If Horizon Forbidden West 2 Zero Dawn 3 is the last in the Horizon series, and then we move on from that, I'm fine with that, right? We got three great games, and now let's move on. And so you've seen, like, Ghost of Tsushima, I would not want them to go back and make another Infamous, right? Ghost of Tsushima was awesome. We want to keep with Ghost of Tsushima. And Infamous was, like, this great era of PS3 games, right? And then very early PS4. I don't know if that series needs to come back. I don't know if anybody's clamoring for it. So it's just like,
you say that on the 13th anniversary of Infamous 1, Mark. How dare you?
So terrible. So it's like,
that series kind of had to go away for Ghost to exist, right? And people love Ghosts, right? So it's like, we can't have everything. And so if it's going to be the split of, like, we're going to continue making games, but then we're going to make new stuff, I'm super down for new stuff. Because it's hard to get excited until you know what those things are. But once those things are here, people will welcome them with open arms, right? So I'm very excited for this.
But Mark, we need Sly 99
yes,
Cooper.
We need Sly
99. The series needs to go to 99 games and literally end at 99. It needs to end at Sly 99.
I thought you meant Sly 1999. Like, he goes to the year 1999.
Oh, that's what I thought.
That would be cool too. But no, I want 99 Sly Cooper games.
My God.
And them in.
Like, Mark, I think your point is valid, but like Jada, I also want the new Sly Cooper. So, you know, that's where I'm at right now. But no, I do think, we need those franchises. It's how we got, you're pointing some progression there. It's the same thing with, like, Naughty Dog. They went from Crash to Jack to Uncharted to The Last of Us. We don't get that progression if they don't try new things, and we don't find new franchises we love if they don't try new things. At the same time, we love those things, and so seeing some of them still exist is great to do. In terms of seeing franchises stick around or things continue to also invest in new IP, I think it's also worth pointing out, I know some people get scared about this, but I don't think it's going to take away from the PlayStation games we love, but PlayStation is really looking for PC and mobile to be a big part of their offerings. In the last fiscal year, I believe they said they made $80 million on PC via, you know, ports and things like that. They're looking at the next year to be $300 million in net sales, I believe, for PC, which probably means a lot more ports, as well as, I believe, the live service games. They talked about those potentially launching on PlayStation and PC. So you might see that stuff launch day and date to a certain degree as a potential there. And not only that, in terms of just their actual number percentages of releases, by fiscal year 2025, they're estimating that mobile and PC will account for a combined 50% of their output of releases. So they're really pushing for those two things to be there. Obviously, PC, we see the trajectory a little bit more. Obviously, it's ports, it's free-to-play stuff or live service games that can work in that ecosystem, stuff that can sell really well on Steam but can have lively fan bases that can have cross-play, all those things. Mobile is a little different. During the outlook, you know, look ahead thing, they did discuss that they're both looking at upping the expertise of mobile development with internal studios, as well as partnering with expertise in third-party mobile game developers that already exist to work with them, and even possibly publishing just existing mobile developers' games. So they might not even be looking to, you know, develop stuff based on their IP, but also additionally just publish other games that they feel fit within their purview. We'll have to see if this works out. Obviously, PlayStation has dipped a toe in mobile before. Xbox has dipped a toe in mobile before. They'll have a bigger toe in it. It's a weird metaphor when they own Activision because of King. But mm-hmm. I think this is going to be a bigger part of the PlayStation pie. But I also don't think it means Spider-Man goes away, God of War goes away, you know, The Last of Us goes away. The way that we know those games, I don't think those are going to disappear. And I don't think people should worry that those will disappear. I think we're just going to see more because they have to diversify to make the money.
Yep. I honestly see God of War hibernating after Ragnarok till probably 2026, 2028. Like somewhere in that range, probably, like because they're going to be looking, you know, there's been murmurs in the industry about, you know, Santa Monica working on something new and we don't know what that's going to be. But chances are they're going to be focusing on whatever this new IP that they want to release. And then when they're ready to redo God of War again, like they did in 2018, we'll see it pop its head back up again. So I think that's very safe to say.
Yeah, and as we're seeing, we'll still see it exist through the TV show, because it's not like that TV show is going to premiere this year. So
exactly.
I think you're going to see the franchises you still love. You're going to see the types of games you still love. I think PlayStation knows how they've made their name, and they're not going to suddenly abandon that stuff. But we're seeing, I think we've seen, you know, hiring for an Insomniac multiplayer job. We know Naughty Dog is working on their multiplayer game. Within the next fiscal year, I think PlayStation said it wants 3 live service games, one of them being MLB The Show. I was actually talking with a few people on Twitter about this. It's sort of weird because they say one of them is MLB The Show. I don't know if that means there are 2 more cumulative new live service games that are going to launch in the next year, or one of those is from last year, which would be Gran Turismo, because that was in the last fiscal year. So it could be that as a carryover, or we might get 2 more live service games in the portfolio in the next year, which is a lot because we don't know what's coming up for Sony right now.
PlayStation All-Stars 2 live action.
Yeah.
Or live service
live
game.
Action. No, live action, action PlayStation 2. All-Stars.
Yes.
That's the one that'll be live action.
Oh my, this is somewhat of a plug. I was on Fanbyte's Channel F podcast this week, which is really fun. You should go listen to it. But we were talking about PlayStation All-Stars, and they were like, do you want that? Do people talk about that? I'm like, we mention it almost every other week on this show. And I feel like that is our cross to bear at this point. I want that game to exist. Moving on from there, though, a lot of exciting potential for things. Earlier, you know, to speaking to the PC port thing, I think it's also worth mentioning Returnal apparently showed up in the Steam database. So expect that PC port probably pretty soon.
I just want to mention, that's such a no-brainer. Like, oh, that game is like, when you play something like God of War Horizon, like, those games are like, yeah, they're great on PC. Absolutely. But, like, Returnal will get so much from mouse and keyboard gameplay, right? Like, that game is the reflexes and the you know, it's really hard sometimes for people like me with like a DualSense. Like, you have to, aiming is your right stick, and your thumb controls that stick, and your thumb also jumps, and your thumb dashes. Like, that's a lot of stuff you have to take off the aiming to do, right? And so, like, that game is so built for, like, mouse and keyboard. I cannot wait to play that game on PC. I'm very excited. I'm a big fan of Risk of Rain 2, which is, like, you know, kind of a similar game. And so I'm very, very excited for Returnal on PC. And I'm not surprised at all to see that it's on the Steam database.
And my hands don't know how to use a keyboard. So I have never played a game that way. And it's
Do you write entire articles using the DualSense?
I use the DualSense. I go through on the touchpad. I'm like scrolling on, you know, the little touchpad, clicking. Sorry, go ahead, Jada.
I was going to say, do they have the swipe feature where you can just swipe your hand across the keyboard?
Exactly. Mm-hmm. I did get really adept at using the touchpad to type during the PS4 generation. Like, it became a skill I acquired, which is totally unusable anywhere else. But yeah, I genuinely cannot play games on mouse and keyboard. It's just like, it's like really learning a foreign language to me right now. My brain can't compute it.
That's so funny. I got really good at using the gyro, you know, that like when you you can move the controller and you see the little pointer on the text and you just like tick, tick,
tick. Yeah,
like I got really good at that because that's actually surprisingly fast way to type. But on the DualSense, I've been doing the voice to, you know, teach to the what is speech
the
to
voice
text.
To
there
teach.
We go.
Yes.
The voice to teach. The speech to text. And it actually works like pretty good if I just like want to send a message being like, hey, I'm on or something like that. I just push the button and it like almost always works. So I'm really liking that.
I just spent a full day typing every random word I thought I might ever use, so it shows up in my previously used words.
That's the way to go. Yeah, that's a good life hack. The kids don't know what we had to go through with flip phones and the 1-9 pad and all that. They
They
have it too
texting.
Easy. Yeah, I got so good at that.
I remember when touchscreen phones came out and I was like, I'll never. Physical keyboard. Yeah. And now I'm like, I can't believe, like, we used to type on, like, T9 texting.
It was, like, a big thing to be able to do it without, like, looking. Like, I was able to just type full sentences and not actually have to look at it. Yeah.
Yeah, you're, like, driving down the street and you're... No, I'm just kidding.
No,
Never turn down.
No, don't do that. A third strike, Jada. We're at third strike to go back into the studio. Moving on from there, Mark, I'm actually going to throw to you to start this one because just to keep the show moving, I'm going to give you a couple minutes. As we talked about before the show, it was originally going to be our main topic before all the PlayStation news dropped. Everyone's favorite leaker, I'm just going to read it as I wrote it because I was very proud of it.
It's great.
Everyone's favorite leaker, Norman Reedus, star of Norman Reedus's Ride, the hit AMC show advertised in Death Stranding, starring Norman Reedus, has leaked Death Stranding 2, which also stars Norman Reedus. So during an interview, Norman Reedus basically said that he's working on the Death Stranding sequel. Kojima jokingly replied on Twitter, "Go to your private room, my friend." You know, the room, of course, that he goes to in Death Stranding. So basically, it seems like an open secret at this point. We don't know anything about the sequel. Norman Reedus just said we've come a long way from Ms. Pac-Man. So that's what we have to work on right now. Though in the last couple of years, when Kojima did talk about where the series might go, he said in 2019 he would essentially start from zero for a sequel, whatever that means. Then in 2020, he also said he had some ideas, like fragments of ideas floating around, but nothing concrete at that time. Obviously, some work is going on, that there is a sequel somewhere in production to the extent that Norman is recording. That would make sense given how much we know Kojima has been calling into like the Sony White Studios where they film stuff for mocap. So clearly some work has been going on potentially there. But anyway, Mark, I know as the, I think larger of the fan, potentially all three of us, you might be the biggest fan. I do genuinely like Death Stranding a lot, but I want to hear from you. Just what do you want from a sequel? What would you want there to be?
Well, first I want to address the leak, right? Kojima, he's working with all these Hollywood people, right? So I think he knows, right? Because like Hollywood and the gaming industry are totally different, right? Shows and movies, sequels and second seasons and stuff like that sometimes get announced before the premiere of like the movie, right? Like we knew about A Quiet Place 2 before A Quiet Place even came out, right? And like so many shows are like greenlit for a second season before the shows even started, right?
Like Hollywood, we get the MCU for like 5 years.
Right. And so it's like Hollywood just like they just approach that stuff so much differently. And Kojima just kind of has to know that when he's working with a Hollywood actor like Norman Reedus. He has to know that, like, you know, gaming is very like that's the first big piece of marketing is the fact that it exists, right? So for him to just like offhandedly say that in an interview is like hilarious, but Kojima's response is awesome because what do you expect, dude? You're putting nothing but Hollywood actors in your game. Like that stuff's
and
gonna
he seems understandable about it.
And it seems totally fine. I also want to make a very bold prediction that Death Stranding 2, we might see it this year. The only reason I'm giving that prediction is so Death Stranding came out in 2019, right? So it's been a while. And Silent Hills was canceled in 2015. Death Stranding was revealed in 2016, but did not even go into development until 2017, right? So there's no, like, sense of, like, normalcy when it comes to a timeline. If he's saying he's barely starting the game in, like, 2020, the game could very well be much in production, right? Death Stranding was a long time ago at this point. So, and you know he's been working since, you know, since it came out. So my bold prediction is either Summer Game Fest, which is in 2 weeks, or whatever PlayStation's big showcase is. I have a feeling we'll get something, right, for Death Stranding 2. What I want from a sequel, can I do my memory card sequence really quick?
Sure.
I want to talk
give me a story.
I want to talk about Death Stranding because everybody has those games, right? That's not like just a game or just a movie or just a show. It's something that's just like a little bit more special because of, for the most part, their timing, right? So before I worked at IGN, everybody always said going to E3 is like the coolest thing ever, right? Because you get to be in a giant room with all of your friends and coworkers, and you guys get to watch these conferences together. And I always thought, man, I wish I could do that. And I used to have my friends over, and we watched E3 2015, saw the Fallout 4 reveal together, and was like, this is amazing. But like, that's what everybody on podcasts always said, was that like, oh, it's so fun to do it in like the IGN war room. So my first E3 with IGN was, I started in 2015, and my first E3 was 2016, which will go down in history as one of the best PlayStation E3 showcases ever, right? But largely because that's when Death Stranding was revealed. And that reveal of Norman Reedus, the beach trailer, and the camera turns, and it's Norman Reedus after all this drama of, like, Kojima basically being locked in a room at Konami because he's not allowed to work on stuff. Like, to see that Kojima is, you know, he does the, I'm back, and I have a game, and it's running in real time. And then the reveal of Norman Reedus, like, that exceeded any expectations that I could have had of watching a conference with, you know, the biggest video game media company in the world. Like, the room exploded. Dornbush, did you work here during that time?
That was E3 was my second week of work. E3 2016 was my second week of
so
work.
You were in the room.
I was in the room. That was the same year I brought it up, because the PlayStation 2016 conference is our number one E3 moment, the entire conference of the last 10 years, because it was that. It was The Last Guardian, Horizon, yep. Detroit, Days Gone, God of War, and Spider-Man.
Yeah, and The Last Guardian release date, which is also very important because that game had like been reported as canceled and stuff like that. So yeah, that's such a special conference. And for that to be my first one was like big, right? And then to still not know anything about Death Stranding and then get the second trailer where they reveal Mads Mikkelsen, like, yo, that blew my mind. Because, like, 007, Casino Royale had just come out, and so, or not just come out, a decade before. But, like, Mads Mikkelsen is awesome. And so to see him in the trailer, it was insane. And then I worked overnight for the first Japanese, for the first playthrough where we saw gameplay for the first time. I worked in the IGN office. I stayed there all night to watch and cover that. And to see him play the game for the first time was just like incredible. And then lastly, just to cap it all off. So Mark is peak hype for Death Stranding. He cannot wait, right? And I'm waiting to receive our copy of the game. And PlayStation will kind of sometimes tell you when we're going to get it. So I'm a big Call of Duty fan, and I go to an event pre-pandemic. I go to an event where I basically go to Los Angeles, and I play Call of Duty for a week straight. And I got my code when I landed in L.A. to be away from my console for a week straight is my Death Stranding code. I called my wife. I'm like, install Death Stranding. I'm sitting there. I just like am not. I can't do anything but think about the fact that I own the game. I almost went to a Target and just bought a PS4 so I could play it in my hotel room just for that time. But it's hard with events like that. Like, they're all encompassing, and so you just don't have time. But shout out to Chandler, who he works on the Hogwarts game now, but he worked at PlayStation Lifestyle. He brought his PS4 because he knew that we were gonna get it, and I'm like, that's such a baller move. So and I got home from that event and I immediately started playing the game, and yeah, long story short, I really, really like it. Okay, that was my memory card. Sorry for talking for 20 straight minutes about
this. No, it's okay, but Jada, were you going to say something?
I was going to say, Chandler's good peeps. Was on my he was on my Team Sonic Racing team at in London. He was one of my cohorts when we decimated the rest of the competition that year, which was great. But no, I 100% agree with Mark that 2016 E3, I was there in the arena watching it. There was so much. I was just like, another one? Another one? Like that was just.
That was like the first E3 where they were like, we're not even going to talk. We're just going to show banger after banger. And like, it set a new precedent for what E3 conferences would become.
Yeah. No, that was amazing. It was crazy. I wasn't with IGN, obviously, during that time. I was freelancing, but I was covering it for a smaller outlet at the time. And I was lucky to go. But yeah, like it was such a crazy and like just transformative experience. Like that is the E3 that I want to come back and be a staple in the industry after post-COVID, because there are so many people, and we've talked about this on the show, or maybe I talked about it on another podcast. I can't remember. But E3 is such a feather in the cap for a journalist in this industry, in the gaming journalism industry. Being able to go and cover something major like that, like it not only... It kind of sets the bar for like what to expect, like at the peak of your coverage for games. And so like, I really hope that we get a good replacement for E3, or E3 is reborn. Maybe, you know, Death Stranding 2 will have a convention center of E3 and we'll see. But it'll be, you know, I really hope we get it back. So we can see more stuff like that, like 2016. I'm not the hugest Death Stranding fan, so I'm going to go just completely random. I want 500% more babies in Death Stranding 2.
So five babies.
Just a nursery of babies.
He's just pushing strollers.
It is a baby-raising management sim, and that's it. There's no exploration. Yep. There's nothing else. He's just running a nursery.
Yeah. You get to build nurseries, preschools, nowhere bridges. Yeah, but you can build those too, but you're building nurseries and kindergartens.
And cribs and playpens. Yeah. Perfect.
Yeah.
So
as I've now explained, like, this game has just got a special place in my heart. But now I will take that cap off and put on the actual critical thinking about the game. Never make me walk in the snow again. Just don't ever do that to me again.
Yeah, that was
just knock that off. I'd love to see more vehicle variety. Like, the vehicles we had were good, so I'd like to see what else we could do. I'd also like the vehicles to drive a little bit better than they do. The vehicles in that game do not turn well. They get stuck on everything. And so I'd love to see that. Trying to get the like platinum trophy and stuff, it made me realize how much I would love a way to actually eradicate BTs, because that just becomes like so annoying. Like, you're like, dude, I'm done. I'm done with the story. I'm just trying to get this stuff done. And then it's like, freaking the thing comes out and it's like, oh, BTs. And I'm like, are you kidding me, dude? Like, I am so over this. You have like 17 blood weapons in your backpack. You're just like, you all die now. Like, I'm sick of this. So like, to actually be able to eradicate BTs would be fantastic. And then, you know, just a lot of the like little frustrating moments in the game. You know, the game punishes you for trying to do things too quickly, right? The whole point of the game is to go slow. So when you're running everywhere and jumping over rocks and stuff like that, and then he trips and you drop all your stuff everywhere, like, that is the game punishing you for not technically playing it correctly. It's supposed to be slow going, and you're supposed to have your MP3 player. Look, I want to be able to like play it a little bit more how I want to play it. So that's my list. I also agree with one you put, which is the weapons. So I'll let you say that one, because I agree with it.
Yeah, just to quickly, because I think for me, you know, Death Stranding doesn't hit those highs for me as much. But I think I'm somewhere in between you and Jada on it in terms of there are parts of it I really, really love. Where for anyone who's watching the video version, there was some blurred stuff on screen. That was because we weren't allowed to actually show you a part of the game at review time. That was just very funny to see what was... Yep. It looked like a graphic that we were blurring. That wasn't what that was. But anyway.
It's the zip lines. We weren't show the zip lines. We weren't allowed to show the one thing that makes the terrible snow section actually bearable.
But yeah, to your point, the snow section is my least favorite part of the game. I think the sweet spot for what I loved about the game was like chapter 3-4-ish range. I think somewhere in there, where you're building roads, where you're doing deliveries, where you have a decent arsenal of stuff, but you're also gaining things. And there are frustrations with some of the vehicles, with some of the getting caught on things, but there's also enough, I think, exciting about building up stuff there. Like, it really, I do love, like, city building stuff to that extent. Like, it's a weird one for me, but Ni No Kuni 2, you have essentially a kingdom that you build up, and you, like, pick certain stores to grow up, and you have that, like, RPG mechanic of building up your own little, like, hub. That stuff in Death Stranding spoke to me very strongly here, where it was building out the roads, making sure they were well paved, using something someone else put down to help you out. There was a limitation on the level of frustration during that part of the game for me that gets exacerbated as you go on. But I think, like, if it's going to retain those gameplay elements, I'd want it to double down on that stuff rather than the more frustrating things. The other part is, yeah, for me, person-to-person combat, I agree the BTEs, after you face too many of them, are not fun, but at first it's an exciting element, so I want things that capture that and not the person-to-person weapon combat. I didn't think it worked very well. I thought the weapon arsenal was not that great. I thought the combat itself was just bullet sponges and nothing else of really interest to me, or just a couple quick combos that weren't exciting to pull off, and then you just moved on with your day. The human-level combat and you know, frustrations there were things I just avoided as much as possible, other than the required shooting sections of the game. So I hope that that can be moved away from or improved greatly, because I didn't love that. But honestly, Jada, to your point, I think better interaction with the baby would be cool. I do think it was,
yeah,
it was funny to be able to pull the baby up and to move the controller a little bit to emulate the shaking and things like that. I don't want it to cry.
Rocking. It's rocking. You do not shake babies.
Thank you. You're correct. I'm just saying words. I don't know what I'm saying. You do not shake a baby. Yes, you are correct. I saw many of those signs when I used to go to a pediatrician as a child. They always have stuck with me. How many signs were on the door coming in of, like, don't shake your baby. And as a 7-year-old, I was always like, why is that such a big deal? Who's shaking babies? A lot of people, apparently. More anyway, apparently. Anyway, I think finding clever ways to use that interactive stuff, like, we do know at some point in the development of Silent Hills, I think there were thoughts of, like, you would get texts or calls from characters in game. Like, Kojima loves that meta level storytelling. And I think if there are ways for this to do that on the PS5, especially with the DualSense, especially what they've already learned from the director's cut, like, amplifying that stuff, amplifying the 3D audio, I think they could so easily take advantage of really cool stuff in that way. But yeah, as of right now, we just know it's a game that Norman Reedus has leaked, and that's about all we know.
I also want other flavors
of monster.
Yes.
Well, those are not even in the director's cut because the licensing expired.
Were they completely taken out? I thought it was just at a certain point.
They're out. So in the base game, they would eventually change to, like, a beer, but in the director's cut, it's just Bridges Energy because more than likely licensing expired.
Gotcha.
You still boot up the PS4 version on your PS5, and like, they're there, but they're completely removed. As far as, like, the building up of the community and stuff like that, I like stuff like that a lot. It's so funny. So when you play this game pre-release, like we did, you know, you're only usually playing with, like, other media people. And there's a guy, a YouTuber, Yong Ye, pretty popular YouTuber, who I, like, still follow. He was everywhere. And I still follow and interact with him and watch his YouTube videos. I had no idea who he was. But I'm just like, who is this dude that is, like, right in front of me the whole time? Like, every time it was like, oh, I got to do this mission. Oh, there's already a ladder there placed by Yong Ye. I'm like, man, this guy's there. This guy is, like, he went hard on that game.
But yeah, to your point, I do think, like, when it can take advantage of that, it's positive reinforcement system of a community, so sort of social media platform.
Yeah, was, like, doing likes and
stuff. Yeah, worked well, and I do think they could do more there. But yeah, well, I think, you know, mark to your guesses, Summer Games Fest is not a bad one considering how much Keighley and Kojima interact and whatnot. So we'll see, obviously, if there's more Death Stranding news, we'll tell you about it in the weeks to come. Very briefly, I just want to mention before we move on, because I do want to make sure, Jada, you have some time to talk about a game that you've been playing. Just very quickly, there's been some PlayStation Plus stuff that has happened over the last week. We're going to kind of table PlayStation Plus until it comes out in the US, just when we get our hands on it, when we're able to actually play with it ourselves. But I will say, just so people out there know, trophies are being added to select games from the PlayStation 1 and PSP generation. It is optional for the devs to do so themselves, so not every game will get it. It's a case-by-case basis, but stuff like Siphon Filter and Ape Escape and more has been getting them, so you can look forward to that as well. Also, there was some confusion. People who have gotten PlayStation Plus in Asia were getting charged, basically, if they bought it at a discount, they were getting charged the amount they got it at a discount for PlayStation Plus originally, in addition to the price of the new PlayStation Plus. That is not happening anymore. PlayStation called it an error, whether or not it was. That won't be the case, so don't worry about that as we get closer to the launch in other territories. And yeah, last but not least, the full list is not out there. The current territories that have it don't have the full 700 games, so we just don't know what the library looks like. When we get a better sense, we'll talk about that in mid-June, as we're expecting it. But anyway, moving on from there, I did want to also shout out, if you haven't seen it, go check out IGN or the PlayStation blog. The God of War Ragnarok devs revealed over 60 accessibility features will be coming to Ragnarok. A lot of detail, screenshots of how it's being used, examples, descriptions of what they're doing, whether it's for text or visual or auditory things. A lot of great details there. A lot of stuff that may be familiar to you if you saw what Naughty Dog did with The Last of Us Part 2, in addition to some other cool new stuff. Please go check that out. We'll obviously talk about that more when the game releases, or is released, but looking forward to that. But I do want to briefly touch on, Jada, you've gotten the chance. I have not been able to. Mark, I don't think you've been able to, but kind of the hottest game right now, even though it's only like a closed alpha or beta, Multiverses, the WB Smash Brothers-like. How have you been liking it?
I'm really liking it. It's a lot of fun. It plays very similar to like a Brawlhalla more than a Smash, just when it comes to like the pacing and timing and some of the mechanics. There's not advanced stuff like wave dashing, like which was in Nickelodeon All-Stars Brawl, I believe is the right name for that one. But yeah, it's got the voice acting. It's a lot of fun. They've got free-for-all, 1v1, 2v2, and it just plays like a Smash. You damage other people, build up their percentages, and try to knock them off the stage. So far in the closed alpha, it's first to four in 2v2 or first to two in the 1v1 matches. I haven't done actually a free-for-all to see what that is, but that's probably first to three or four as well. But it's a lot of fun. Great character selection so far. I'm really liking Harley. I'm really liking Arya Stark. She's like the Kirby of the game, to where she can literally steal faces from her opponents and use their moves.
That's
she was the Kirby of Game of Thrones. So
Yeah, she is literally the Kirby of Multiverses. So like if you steal Shaggy's face, you can, you know, charge up like a Falcon Punch. If you steal Bugs Bunny's, you get like his hammer. Or mallet, I think, is the more appropriate term for him. If you steal Batman's face, even though he's wearing a mask, you you get to throw a batarang that like boomerangs back, kind of like Link's boomerang. But yeah, it's a lot of fun. It's got a lot of good stuff. I'm unlocking stuff pretty quickly through just like by completing daily challenges and winning most of my matches. I think I've got like a 85 or 90% win rate right now. But yeah, it's a lot of fun. It's really good. I highly recommend people to try it out when access becomes more prevalent to everybody, because it's really good. And I just love all the little voice lines, and there's specific voice lines between characters, even if they're not in the same universe. Batman calls Shaggy a hippie, you know, things like that. So like there's just all types of really cool things that change based on who you're playing and who you're playing against and what's happening in the fight. So highly recommend Multiverses.
Yeah, I think to your point, there's going to be a more open beta coming later this summer, which I am very excited for, especially after hearing your and a few other people's reactions to it so far. It seems like it's really well put together, like pretty well balanced character wise. Like, have you felt like as you've been playing, anyone is particularly overpowered or under?
Honestly, I haven't felt that. It's a little tricky right now because as you play characters, they rank up, and as they rank up, they get perk slots, and you can equip different perks. Each character has specific perks, but then once you get to a certain level, you can unlock this like perk library, where you can spend currency to unlock perks for all of the characters or specific perks for a different character. So like, you know, if Batman has one specific perk that like gives you an extra jump, but Harley doesn't, you can buy that when you level up Harley enough, you can buy that perk and put it on Harley Quinn. So a lot of cool things. I think it's a lot of experimentation that's going to happen in the community right now. But yeah, I honestly, I haven't felt too anybody that's could have stood out from being overpowered and such.
Awesome.
Not yet.
Yeah, I just like that this is such a, you know, I think people looked at Space Jam 2 as a very cynical approach to this and were worried that multiverses would be the same. But it seems like, no, the dev team took this seriously as making it a really competent fighter, thought of some creative stuff to put in there. And it's weird to have Bugs Bunny fight Garnet, fight Harley Quinn, fight the Iron Giant, but it works so far.
That's the only character that's not in the closed alpha, okay, at least from the last time I booted up, is the Iron Giant.
Gotcha.
He's not he wasn't available last time I booted up like 2 or 3 days ago, but looking forward to trying him out when he eventually makes his debut.
Yeah. It's really cool. I'm glad you've had time with it. I hope that we can play it together at some point when it you know, gets into a more open space. And hearing your win ratio, I kind of just want to have like an open call for Beyond fans to fight and see how they do against you.
Yeah. I'm down.
Would be
Let's do it.
Really fun maybe when there's an open beta later this summer. But I'm very glad to hear that. And unfortunately, we're pretty much running out of time. And so, Mark, I do have a tweet I'm going to ask you about next week.
But oh, you, no way, you're not going to do that.
Yeah, well, it's going to take too long to get into, and we literally have to wrap up. So,
oh,
unfortunately,
so
I'm gonna make you stew for another week of waiting to know what I put in the run of show as, Mark, there's a tweet I'm going to ask you about. What tweet? We'll find out next week. But no, Mark, since you shared a memory card on the show, first of all, thank you for doing so, and another call out, as always, for anyone who would like to share a memory card story, you can write in to beyond@ign.com with the subject line memory card, and we'll read them on the show each and every week that we can. So please, please send those in. But in addition to that, just wanted to thank you all for being on the show. Jada, I know that you have been putting up a piece that we had talked about before, but it's the first one is live. So do you want to just give a quick shout out for your new project?
Yeah, definitely. Go to IGN.com. We just launched a new format called Photo Mode. We want you to send in your best in-game screenshots from your games. This current theme is heroes. So whether that's Spider-Man, Batman, Aloy, anybody doing something heroic in a game, send in those images in a photo for us to all check it out. We've got a bunch of people on staff. Other users are commenting on these images. I'll be highlighting the top images voted by the community as well as ones voted by staff. And when we announce the next theme, you have until Monday, May 30th at 10 a.m. to submit to be considered for the next one. So, but yeah, definitely do that. And then also I'm going to plug a second one.
Go for it.
It's been taken off. We have our water cooler chats, which are called Let's Talk About. We did one just went live yesterday, I believe. It's called From Blade to the Raid. Let's talk about our favorite action movies. And I think it's my best headline I've ever written in my entire life. So come share your favorite action movies with us. We would love to hear your guys' input as part of the IGN community.
Awesome. And yeah, I've seen a lot of Spider-Man and Horizon and Ghost photos in there, as you were mentioning, Jada. So if you're a listener or a viewer and you also are dropping photos in there, throw a Beyond in there so we know where you came from.
Yeah.
But yeah, in addition to that, Mark, anything you want to tout before we wrap up?
No, I have been working on a piece that doesn't come out till next week. And then not that it's like a huge secret, but it's not worth talking about yet. And then Summer Gaming's coming out soon. So
it is.
Or, you know, coming up soon. So it's like, it's just a lot of stuff like that. So,
yeah.
The piece that Mark's working on is what is Splash Mountain water actually taste like?
How to filter Splash Mountain to make it drinkable.
Well, you can look forward to that on IGN. But yeah, as Mark mentioned, Summer of Gaming is almost upon us, and we'll be having a lot of coverage on IGN. I'll have more details on stuff you can tune into next week for sort of IGN Summer of Gaming programming, what we're doing pre and post shows for, and all that sort of jazz. So stay tuned for that. But yeah, there's going to be a lot because people don't say things until they happen. So we have to scramble, and that's what June is now instead of that week of E3. We have a lot of caffeine in our systems coming up. But anyway, Mark and Jada, thank you so much for joining me for this week's episode. You can find us all on Twitter. I'm at JM Dornbush. Mark is at Mark_Medina. And Jada is at Jada_Rena. Thank you as well to Kate, our producer, for making the show happen this week. And thank you to everyone out there for listening and watching. We hope you're doing well. We hope you're staying safe. And as always, beyond.
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 Hey, I'm Jillian Clare, the host of the podcast Thanks for Coming In. I've accumulated some pretty crazy audition stories over the past 20 years, and so have my friends.
And I was like, you know what? No, not going
to
do this.
And then Disney calls and is like, we need you to come test for the Ant-Man movies.
I didn't know if my scene was going to get cut or not.
Ooh, I could play that.
Tune in every Thursday to hear your favorite actors tell the funniest, saddest, and most cringeworthy audition stories. Sometimes even the one that got away. Thanks for Coming In is available on Apple, Spotify, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts.